Music should be free. So should radio. This is Ian from Fugazi, and this is Radio Free Santa Cruz. Music should be free. So should radio.
Hello, everyone. This is Camilo Mejia, war resistor, conscience objector, pacifist, political activist, and former political prisoner. And you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz on 101.1 FM.
Free Radio Santa Cruz. It's one of the longest-running non-licensed radio stations in the country.
And indeed, you're tuned to Freak Radio Santa Cruz 101 FM, freakradio.org. And that's the soothing sounds of Crystal Method's Community Service, Part 1. And on the phone with me is none other than John Anderson. Are you there?
Mm-hmm, I'm here.
Can you hear me all right there?
Yes, I can hear you just fine.
And we're talking to John Anderson here, who's the host of the show called Media Minutes, which we play here on Free Radio Santa Cruz after Counterspin, 6 o'clock. And he's a commercial radio journalist. He was a commercial radio journalist.
Yes, past tense.
And he's an undercover agent for Fox. No, I'm just kidding. And that career in 2000. In 2001, he co-founded the Workers Independent News Service, the first nationwide labor-centric radio news service in 50 years. He's now a doctoral student at the University of Illinois Institute of Communications Research and spends much of his free time exploring the worlds of micro-radio and media collage. John, how you doing today?
I'm just peachy.
And you're also the host of the website, www.diymedia.net, which is
Yes, I do.
Excellent website. You bring up the issue of what we're doing here, unlicensed micropower radio.
Yes. I started the website, actually, back in my previous life as a commercial radio journalist. And it actually began kind of as a side project as part of a .com. And I noticed that at that time, no one was covering micro radio in the United States, you know, like a beat, like, you know, as something that someone would regularly report on. There were a couple of websites out there that were just basically collections of links, not a lot of news, not a lot of coherence about what the scene itself was doing, so I just started writing about it. That was 97, and in 2001 or 2002, I left the whole .com thing and took all my content with me and transferred it over to DIYmedia.net, where it resides today, ad-free and completely programmed in all old-school HTML. Yay.
what was the commercial radio station you worked with?
Well, I started with stations in Indiana, where I did my undergrad work. It was a mom-and-pop FM and AM combo. The FM was country, and the AM was, the AM was only like 1,000 watts and went through several formats, news talk, right-wing patriot militia-style talk, music of your life, which is basically nursing home soundtracks for big band music and other crap like that. And then I moved to Wisconsin, and I worked for stations in Madison. And I ended up at the Wisconsin Radio Network, which had 54 stations around the state, and I was the morning anchor, and that was my last job in commercial radio when I left in 2000.
And now and then you went to Workers Independent News?
Yeah, I spent a year just kind of kicking around, figuring out what exactly it was I wanted to do with myself, and I decided that the last refuge of a scoundrel is graduate school. And so I applied to graduate school, and the same week I got in, I also got this letter from Frank Emspach, the brainchild of the Workers Independent News Service, and he's like, hey, you want to do some radio? And I was like, well, sure, because, you know, I need money to pay rent, and we launched it from there. And my other co-founder, John Hamilton, has moved on to Democracy Now. He's now one of the TV producer staff folks. You might see him around when Amy is gallivanting around with her massive book tours.
Hey, he hits me up for songs about different subjects sometimes.
Yeah, very cool. So, and then I've just basically been in grad school ever since. First in Madison, and now in Champaign-Urbana. And that's when I left Wins. And when I came down here, Bob McChesney is a professor here, and he basically set me up with a similar thing to Wins, except it's about media reform, and it's only weekly as opposed to daily because it's just me. And that's Media Minutes, and we've been doing that since October. And as far as I know, I'll be able to continue doing that for, you know, at least another year or so. So, woohoo!
You're also Kimberly Chronic is works with you on that show as well.
Right? Yep, Kimberly's the co-anchor. She's an excellent, just an amazing media activist that lives here in Champaign. She works for the public radio and TV stations. Her primary job is to teach children the art of radio production. So she has kids, and they do radio documentaries, like grade school and junior high level.
Wow.
And they play them on the public radio and TV stations here. She's also one of the founding members of the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center, which just bought the downtown Urbana post office.
I heard about that.
Yeah.
Through your website.
So we, the post office in downtown Urbana, Illinois, is renting from an IMC. We are their landlord. And so Kimberly's just, you know, completely committed to the media activism, media reform issues. She has a great voice, which is kind of important for the slick style, condensed production that the Media Minutes is. And she works for really cheap, which is great because we have no budget for Media Minutes. And that's kind of where it's at. So we get along just fine.
So you got to recently interview Michael Copps, right?
Yeah, that was at the National Conference for Media Reform, which was not last weekend, but the weekend before in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
A friend of mine who works for a radio station in Boston came to me early on in the conference for a favor. He wanted some audio that I collected, and I gave it to him. And in exchange, he happened to let me in on an opportunity that he and someone from Free Speech Television were taking advantage of to interview Michael Copps. It was supposed to be Michael Copps and Jonathan Adelstein, but it was only Michael Copps.
Hmm.
We met him in somebody's suite and set him up underneath the lights, and all three of us just kind of tag-teamed questions at him, which was kind of fun because I'd never had the chance to do that in a formal situation before. So
it was a videoed as well?
Yeah, Free Speech Television taped the whole thing.
Wow.
And I think they'll be using it in some sort of production probably in the fall, I think, mm-hmm. is what the producer was saying, maybe like August or September. So watch your local listings and all that jazz.
Folks that want to listen to it, you can go to freepress.net/Media Minutes and download a little 5-minute segment of the Media Minutes show, which is really cool because it's a great show to have, like, the play in between music. That's one thing I noticed. Like, sometimes I'll mix it in with some music and it just, like, flows really well.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, it's not designed to be, you know, the comprehensive, mind filling experience as, you know, half hour long shows are or things like that. It's just supposed to be quick, bite-sized, hey, these are some of the issues that are happening right now in the world of media that you should know about and aren't getting any coverage. And the idea is, you know, hopefully people will hear this little ditty and go, wow, that's kind of intriguing or interesting. I really think I should find out more about that. And then they'll seek out, you know, the information, the comprehensive information, as it were. So, cool. I'm glad that you guys are playing it. And we keep adding new... We find out that new stations are picking it up almost every week, and that's always a good feeling too.
And we're talking to John Anderson here, DIYmedia.net, also host of Media Minutes, and a little bit about your website, DIYmedia.net. Seems like you have a little soft spot for pirates there. Where did all this start from?
Well, you know, although the initial starting of the website was, you know, for a blatantly financial reason, and that was, you know, a monthly stipend that paid my college loans. It became a labor of love because as I worked in the radio industry, see, I graduated from college in 1996, and nobody told me that the Telecom Act of 1996 was being passed. No, it was never mentioned in class. It was never talked about in the radio stations that I worked at. Nobody was talking about it. And so I was totally expecting to go into this radio career, and instead, I watched radio kind of implode. The beginning of the end of radio and the hyper-consolidation, I guess we can say, happened right as I was going into the job market. And so I got more and more disillusioned with, you know, corporate radio and public radio. And then I'm covering all these great low-power micro radio stations that are doing the kind of radio that I always wanted to do, but of course can't be done for financial constraint reasons and all that other jazz. And then the low-power FM thing happened. And to tell you the truth, I wasn't really politically motivated or active in any way until I watched what happened with the FCC and the NAB and NPR, and I you know, reported on it weekly. And I worked for a news, a news outlet that was an NAB member. So I was getting access to all their members-only lobbying information. So I was watching the industry stifle new community stations firsthand, and it disgusted me. So by that point, I radicalized, and when Congress decided to gut the low-power FM proposal in 2000, that was when I basically had my epiphany moment and decided that I could no longer work in radio, but I wanted to devote my energies to micro radio specifically. And so that's what I've been doing ever since.
So how's the outlook for pirate radio as it is nowadays, you know, with our growing technology in other areas?
Well, it's one of these things that's not in the headlines anymore. I mean, you know, what happened in the 90s, especially in the mid to late 90s, was a really, you know, it's a time that has been unequaled in the history of pirate radio in the United States ever.
That's for sure.
And so people seem to think that because, you know, micro radio is not making the same sorts of headlines that it was back then, that, you know, somehow the movement has dwindled or died or something, or that low-power FM has, sapped some of the energy away from it, divide-and-conquer thing. You know, some people decided to chase the license, some people did not. But really, I mean, like any sort of underground resistance movement, there are, ebbs and flows, ups and downs.
Right.
And, over the last 4 years, we've seen we're in a trough. People are not as above board and open about what they are doing. There are more types of these hit-and-run nightly individual or small collective stations operating than there are stations like you, like Freak Radio. I feel personally there's a place for all of them because they're all demonstrating that the technology is there and the rules make no sense and we should go ahead and do it anyway. But it's alive and well. Micro radio is alive and well around the country. Stations that get busted get busted. Oftentimes their equipment gets passed on to new people, just like the old days.
Yeah.
And we still have people, and Banna Cantaco is still on the air, and Human Rights Radio in Springfield.
Is he really?
Kind of my barometer. And so long as he is on the air, you know, everything's okay.
How many times has he been busted over
the years? I want to say four.
Okay.
I want to say it's four. I think there was, like, an initial raid, then there was some court action, and then he had two raids, like, back-to-back within 6 months. And the last I heard, he's still on the air. Actually, you know, I'm an hour's drive from him now, so I really have no excuse not to go visit him sometime this summer, and maybe I'll do that and report back with news.
And what's it called? What's the station called?
Human Rights Radio.
Human Rights Radio. That's right.
And he's actually spurred, you know, a group of people in various areas like Raleigh, Durham, North Carolina, Decatur, Illinois. I thought there was someone somewhere in the Bay Area that was doing it too, but, like, you know, we're taking the Human Rights Radio kind of ideological template and using it to go on the air.
I know Tracy James was talking about getting the station going for some of the folks in the Oakland area.
Yeah, that makes complete sense.
Yeah. I don't know if it's actually started yet or whatever, but I interviewed him a while back.
Well, more power to him. I mean, he's already doing great work.
Oh, God, yeah.
He can take on.
I can't
keep
up.
More is the better.
I can't keep up with him. Anyway, I do. Speaking of the world of micro radio, Berkeley Liberation Radio is the latest thing up on your website. And actually, there's an interview I'm going to play later on today. They're being evicted from their property. Actually, the same place where they got raided at the end of June. They're looking for a place in Oakland area. So if anybody knows any information, contact them. Berklibradio@juno.com. Berklibradio@juno.com. That's from indiebay.org. There's a website there, or I mean a story there, and audio you can download. Almost a half hour interview with them.
Right, Captain Fred.
Yeah, Captain Fred. I guess they're having problems with some of the bands that rent out the space as well.
I mean, usually the blanketing interference is, I guess, the issue that the landlord raised. The landlord, you know, was initially totally down with the station, and it's not like he, I think, really wants to see them leave, but blanketing interference from having the transmitter and antenna so close to all this, you know, amplifier equipment and other instruments that bands are, you know, practicing with, just makes the problem worse. And you could fix it, but it would cost a lot of money to, you know, get various traps and filters to plug in line with all the equipment. I don't think Berkeley Liberation Radio runs on much of a budget.
No.
So, they want a 10 by 10 foot space. Roof access would be nice. And they would really like a landlord who has a grudge with the federal government. There's a landlord that has beefs with the federal government. They want to talk to them.
That's right.
So, but, you know, they got almost, well, they got a month, you know. They got a month's notice, a little more than a month's notice. So it's not like, you know, there's locks on the doors or anything.
They're already getting the word out. Somebody interviewed them, DJ Rubble. Is he from Enemy Combatant, maybe?
I don't know.
It's just like up there.
Yeah, I don't know.
I've heard his voice.
Where the interview originated.
I was listening to it a little bit earlier off air, and his voice sounded really familiar, like I've heard him before, maybe through the Critical Mass Radio stuff.
Yeah, sure. I don't know.
But,
you got me.
I wanted to ask you also about the site DIYmedia.net. You got an awful lot of these truthful translations.
Yeah.
George Bush being one, up to 370 or 270 links. Is that right?
Yeah, there's 270 George Bush pieces up right now.
People that mix stuff down. I don't get these people, you know.
Well, actually, see, that's kind of funny because you and the V-Man were the inspirations in many ways for the Truthful Translation Gallery.
Really?
There was once upon a time, and I think there still exists, there was a merry band of collagists called the Department of Corrections.
Those people.
Who started doing this wacky collage work shortly after September 11th and posted them to IMC sites. And I went, holy shit, this is kind of cool. There should be a stable, permanent place where this kind of stuff can be accessed. And so I started collecting them. And once I built up like a couple dozen, I threw them online. And from there, it just kind of took off. And now there's 300 and something pieces up there. And the vast majority are George Bush, but we have Australia's in the house, Britain's in the house, Norway's in the house.
Wax audio folks. And,
yeah, I mean, it's really kind of a global thing now, and it's pretty cool. And so long as I can afford to keep all that stuff online, I'm going to keep adding to it.
Have you gotten any reaction from people? Like,
yeah.
I mean,
well,
what are some of the reactions to that?
Let's see. A lot of people say that they like the stuff and that it's funny. Obviously, the ones that I've liked the best are the ones who have said like it inspired them to do things. There was this person out on the West Coast, I want to say, like in the Seattle area, who. When Fahrenheit 9/11 played in their local theaters, she dressed up as George Bush. She put on a suit and a George Bush mask, and she downloaded a bunch of these truthful translations and then taped them, like dubbed them off on the CD, and put them in a boombox and held like this little public performance in the mall parking lot with some flyers, like educating people about the connections between the Bush regime and Saudi Arabia.
Wow.
And I was like, wow, that's great. You know, someone took entertainment and turned it into action and turned it into education. That's cool. Then there's the other cool ones, which are the people that just don't get it.
Yeah.
The super patriots, the freedom lovers.
Mm-hmm.
They don't get it. I had someone email me the other day. Actually, it wasn't the other day. It was the other month. And they said, your site's liberal biased because you don't have any Democrat translations up there. You only got 10 Bill Clinton translations, and there's 200 and something of George. That's not fair. You need more Georges or Bill Clintons. And I wrote back very honestly and said, you know what? That's the creative marketplace at work.
Yes.
Republicans don't do audio collage.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, they don't find it valuable. Progressives and radicals and others that left lean toward the left do bully for us. And if no one makes Bill Clinton collages, I can't post them online. So those are my two favorite kind of reactions that I get from the site quite often.
Well, not only political collage, you got links to other awesome collage artists like Negative Land, the illegal art stuff,
yeah,
which is a copyright.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I mean, media collage is such a great expressive medium just to begin with. I mean, it's a lot like micro radio in that people can kind of do with it what they will. And people are reclaiming cultural artifacts, you know, whether it be pop culture or otherwise, and twisting them for new uses. And I'm all for doing that kind of stuff. It's part of the larger, you know, kind of culture jamming exercise. And I just kind of fell in love with it, probably because I'm a radio geek and, you know, I like audio stuff and whatnot. But it's inspired me even to make some of my own. I know I have friends that are, you know, sit in their bedrooms late at night and actually do this kind of shit.
There are people that do that. Oh,
yeah.
My God.
Yeah. I'd love to meet Scott Walmsley someday. The
yeah.
guy in Canada who produces 46 million George Bush collage albums every month.
And the videos.
Yeah.
Oh, the videos are intense. I love them. They're great. Yeah, there's a lot of that.
Yeah, that's somebody you should have on your show.
Yeah?
Yeah, you should interview him.
I should get a hold of him.
See what he's all about.
That sounds
See if
cool.
he can go the 20 question rounds with you.
Not only you got lots of carry. You got Tony Blair, Schwarzenegger,
yeah,
which
yeah.
is starting to grow a little bit. Dick
yeah,
Cheney.
One of my favorites is the Margaret Thatcher one because the guy who did it, who's British, by the way, just totally turned her into a porn star.
and Rumsfeld is growing. Rumsfeld is pretty big. He's got 10 links.
Yeah, well, you know, he says stupid shit all the time. So, I mean, it's pretty easy. People don't even have to, you know, they don't even have to mince words. They can just mince sentences, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, crazy, crazy guy.
There's some people that just take some of the little bites at Bush that have, you know, like putting food on your family and, you know, all those little blurbs that he just comes out of, you know, his drunken ass mouth. But, yeah, so we're here talking to John Anderson, DIYmedia.net, Media Minutes, and I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us here.
Hey,
on
no problem. I wish I could do more of it.
That sounds, you know, well, definitely going to get you back on. I wanted to get your views real quick about file sharing and copyright issues, because we've been kind of covering that a little bit here on the Maintenance Show. We had kind of a little debate talk with John S. Hall last week about those issues, and also downhillbattle.org and different things like that. And I was curious to get your view on musicians, quote unquote, putting their someone else taking their stuff and putting it up on the internet.
Hmm. Well, I think that the increasing restrictiveness of copyright law in general is part and parcel of a larger encroachment on the rights of citizens, human citizens, by corporate power. I think that as corporations have exerted more control over the legislative and judicial systems by dint of buying lawmakers and by flooding flooding courts with lawsuits to effectively poke holes wherever they possibly can. They have whittled away at what was initially supposed to be something that guaranteed an artist some level of prosperity while still maintaining an initiative for them to continue to create. You know what I mean?
Mm. Yeah.
It wasn't that the artist could create a holding company and then create a dynasty off of a couple of works. That wasn't what copyright law was initially meant to be. And that's what it has turned into. And so I don't see how we can actually effectively change what's on the books legally until we attack the larger issue of corporate power and corporate control. And, you know, that's just, I don't know if I'll see that in my lifetime.
Right.
So when you are pushed up against the wall, you just have to go the route of doing things by any means necessary. And if that involves file sharing to spread cultural artifacts, that's fine. Obviously, being a collage enthusiast and whatnot, I advocate for, you know, utilizing what elements of free use or fair use still exist in copyright law, and by using them to the fullest extent and pushing the boundaries, hopefully maybe we can take a little bit of that creative space back. So that's kind of the long-winded short answer for you.
Well, it seems that the folks that actually want to put a track on their album, you know, with some sampled something from the Beatles or from whatever, like, say, Public Enemy wanted to put on the Revolver Lucian, they wanted to put that, there was a song, I forget what it is, Psycho Greed, and they used a little clip from a Beatles album. And then the royalty, what they had to pay for that was so exuberant that they decided to not put the track on their album.
Yeah, well, you know, there was a really... one of the most interesting things that I read or I heard in St. Louis, and the name of the Perlman, Sandy Perlman, he's a famous record producer. He produced The Clash and Blue Oyster Cult, 15 platinum albums to his name. He's working on trying to figure out ways to combine all of the databases of music available online right now into one easily searchable location and put music available, if the artists want to charge for it, at some very, 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 very small price. And his idea behind it is, and while I'm not completely enamored with it, because I kind of lean towards the idealist information should be free kind of thing, is that record labels are going to be irrelevant. Record labels are slowly dwindling in financial power, and with that, they are dwindling on exactly how much control they can exert on our cultural landscape in general. He's looking years down the road, of course, when he's saying this kind of stuff, but the idea that people like him, who have worked in the industry and have come out of it, you know, come out of the dark side, so to speak, and are now working on things outside the industry are so optimistic, gives me some hope that maybe in the future we'll see a better, more utopian-style world where we're sharing information without cost. Until then, hey, you know, do what you have to do to get your fix and spread knowledge, you know.
Yeah.
That's kind of where I come from.
Yeah, it just seems like they want to cut down on the independent information mostly.
Sure.
You know, I mean,
and the technological, you know, things like digital rights management and putting, you know, encryption on CDs and stuff, that'll never work because there will always be people, you know, that will figure out a way to circumvent it. And,
oh, totally. Yeah.
We've seen it over and over again with every new technology that has supposedly threatened culture industries like record labels and movie studios and things. It's never happened. So, you know.
Ian McKay from Fugazi kind of said it the way I thought. He said music is like a river that's there and everybody gets to enjoy it. It's a river, you know.
Sure.
You can hear it. You can go and drink from it whenever you want. But the record industry is like a bottling company that bottles up the water. And somewhere it got all messed up in there, of course. When, you know, originally music, you just heard it. You know, a guy telling a story on the street, you know. And now people want patents and copyrights and
right.
All that kind of wonderful stuff. And,
right.
And it cuts down on the information. And that's part of the corporate control of the state, I believe. I don't know. You know, maybe I'm talking out of my ass, but.
Yep. Yep. It's all part of a big cycle. And, you know, I'm just one guy with one website trying to do my little part.
And you're doing a great part because we've, you know, here at Free Radio, everybody's enjoyed your website and learned a lot from your website.
Cool.
You know, especially when we got raided. You know, it was nice to know that there was someone out there that knows what's going. You know, that's saying what's going on, knows what's going on.
Yeah. And, well, you know, it's been an incredible journey. You know, I've learned a lot just by doing it. I have the utmost respect for people like you and everyone at Freak Radio and, you know, everyone in the micro radio movement who actually, you know, takes a tangible risk. It might be small, but it is still tangible and gets away with it. You know, I mean, you guys are waving the flag saying, look, this is possible. We can do this. Come on, pick the microphone up. And you're doing it in your local community. The internet is supposed to be a networking medium, and so I'm trying to network stations and trade skills and advice and news and tips and analysis, and you know, if it's actually teaching people stuff and you guys are learning from it, then, you know, woohoo, I can die a happy man.
Cool. Well, I appreciate you spending time with me talking to John Anderson of DIYmedia.net and Media Minutes. And Media Minutes is aired here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 6 o'clock every Friday evening, right after Counterspin. And do you want to give us a little station ID off the top of your head? 101 FM?
Yeah, do you want a Media Minutes one? Or a?
Sure, yeah, that'd be cool.
What are you guys, Freak Radio 101.1, right?
Yeah, Freak Radio.
Oh, no, I'm going to give you a different one, okay?
Okay.
All right, here we go.
All right.
This is Poodles McGee from the FCC. And you're listening to Freak Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM.
Oh, my God. We got to send an exorcist over there right away.
It's just a little alter ego I've been working on. I'll do more later.
We're going to wipe the phone off.
Yeah.
All right, John. Well, I appreciate you talking with me. Can you hang on the line there? We'll talk a little more off air.
All right. Thanks, Bob.
All right. We're talking John Anderson, DIYmedia.net. Check out the website, Freak Radio Santa Cruz, 101 FM, freakradio.org. This is Sam and Joe, Save the Children.
I demand an end to war, racism, fascism, classism, sexism, capitalism, destructionism, no more macho bullshit.
I demand an end to xenophobia, classism, repression and oppression, prejudice and bigotry, and McCarthyistic attitudes.
I demand an end to violence against the mind, the locking of doors, and corporate censorship.
I demand the right to look how I want, to listen to what I want, to love who and how I want, and to eat whatever I want to eat.
I demand the right to defy the system, to burn the flag, to turn off that TV, to stop believing the lies, and begin to eat what I want to eat.
I demand the right to throw open the curtains, to pull away the chairs, to shave everything, to laugh, to cry, and to masturbate when, how, and most importantly, wherever I want.
I want to see a world where people dare to care, to express themselves, even when they have nothing to say.
Where the environment is treated as more than just a fucking grab bag.
Where education, food, housing, honesty, and open-mindedness are rights, not privileges.
You want me to salute your flag? To read your prayers, to work in your creaky old factories, to eat your cake? I defy you. I defy your power and your lies. I defy your high-rise stone of war, your out-of-control killing machine,
your sick society,
your bullshit bloodthirsty butchers with an insatiable appetite for blood, your robot system for robots.
And your greediness. If you give me a gun to go fight another man in another land, I'll just shoot myself in the arm or my shoe. So I won't have to go. I won't serve as your TV puppet, your turkey special dinner, your little lost sheep McNugget for the pastures, your rubber policeman punching dummy, your little bug in a box, your bleached dead whale killed by brutality and corporate Exxon oil.
Because your media lies to us and tells us to not eat what we want to eat. But I will eat what I want to eat. And when and where and what and how and why I want to eat.
Respect all life. Learn to think for yourself. Take knowledge and chew it. Cherish the apple tree of the mind.
Read.
Think.
Learn.
Teach.
Swim, bathe, watch, scratch, fondle. Power to the knowledge of the truth. Learn how to tear this system down and create your own motherfucking system, man.
Learn the ancient ways.
Learn how to make your own clothes, food, medicine, tools, housing, entertainment.
Books, bags, records, furniture, toys, pets, cars, utensils, music, amusing anecdotes, pastries, silly masks,
prosthetic forearms, comfortable knits, radial bandsaws, and police forces.
Take from the land only what thou shalt use.
Like the A-Team, the simplest and most purest form of survival.
I refuse! I refuse the lies and garbage and fucking lies of your brave new corporate all hell and George Wilson McReagan world where shit is number one and all the humans swim in the fucking toilet.
The dollar dances on our asses!
Where the man laughs like a giddy school child.
Where the macho TV makes us obey and fear and hate and fart.
Where maggots fester in our poisoned atmosphere.
Where wet dreams are against the law and punishable by death.
Smokestacks belch carbon dioxide into our water supply.
Where little dogs wear suits and ties.
I defy.
I reject.
I refuse.
I decline.
I rebuff.
I not consent.
I renounce.
I turn my rear.
I show you the door.
I make a hasty exit.
I'd not be at home.
You
object.
I
defy
you. I free the part. The end.
I want the spell. That's it. Save the fucking children.
It's Mickey from the FCC. And you're listening to Freak Radio Santa Cruz.